You're listening to Talking Baseball with Ed Randall, presented by MLB.com. He's Ed Randall. He's talking baseball. What more do you need?
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, Big Ed and Nora's baby boy, and welcome back to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. Our guest has more winter meeting stories than anybody. Here's a few from the manager of the then Florida Marlins that won the 2003 World Series, beating the Yankees, and is still an advisor to the ball club. What a joy to bring to the broadcast, Jack McKeon. What year was your first winter meetings? You remember?
1954, Ed.
And what was that like in 1954?
Well, it was in Louisville. I think it was Louisville, Kentucky, and it was a little different. You had a convention that was entirely baseball people. You seen very few. You never saw a job seeker, like you have today, where you have programs and everything at the winter meetings, and you hardly ever saw, and there was no agents involved. And when you were dealing with baseball, you seen the lobbies were filled with baseball people, and you could talk baseball or trades or whatever, the whole night, the whole time.
And a lot of business got done in the lobby.
That's where you got it done, is in the lobby. And as I continued to go to winter meetings, I was still a minor leaguer. I was looking for a job. At first, I was a job
seeker. You were job seeker.
I was job seeker then.
When did it begin to change? When did it become so much larger?
Well, I would say probably, I'm going to guess 10, 12 years ago when we started to see a lot more of the the cable companies coming in, the internet companies coming in and hiring different people, and everybody looking, and the competition was a little bit stronger then. Hmm.
It was really informal though then. The lobby was the beehive of activity. There was a lot going on at night, guys getting together, smoking cigars,
right,
and making deals.
Well, that was a good thing about it. You could smoke at those hotels in those days. But that's how you made deals. Even when I became general manager, I used to set up in the lobby. I never left the lobby. Today, they don't leave.
They're all up in their rooms.
They never leave the rooms. I haven't seen... We have 30 clubs in baseball. I haven't seen people from over 10 clubs down here. The rest of them are hiding in the rooms. And the other thing that's gone different today is the texting. You always went to the room, you met with individuals, and you had the conversations. You went up looking for a player, player A, and you couldn't make a deal on player A, and you said, well, let's leave. And when did that? Well, hold on. Would you be interested in player B? And then you made trades that way. Today it's they text you. Are you interested in A? And then the other club would call back. No. That's the end of the conversation. There's no conversation. There's no dialogue today that would enable you to make two or three club trades.
And not the face-to-face contact also.
Right, absolutely. That's the thing that I miss, is the face-to-face contact where you can... I used to sit in the lobby just like we're sitting here today, and I'd have Dick Hager or one of my scouts, I'd see John McHale or somebody run through the lobby. Go get him right away. But today, it can't be done.
Who was the first person that called you Trader Jack?
I don't know who would be. I can't give anybody that identification, except I know that when I took over at San Diego, and Ray Kroc says, do whatever you... I don't know much about baseball. Just do whatever you think is right. Don't even ask me. Just tell me after you've done it. And that's when I started wheeling and dealing, getting rid of all the old veterans that couldn't play anymore and bringing in young people. And some writer just said, gave me the nickname Trader Jack. Who it was, I have no idea.
What a great opportunity, though, for you to work for an owner who trusted you like that, and you repaid that trust by taking that Padres team in 1984 to the World Series.
Well, it was funny, because I went out there that year, the year before, and they hired me as the assistant general manager, and we hired Jerry Coleman, and Bob Fontaine was the general manager, and he wanted me to go down to spring training, suit up, and help Jerry Coleman, in the manager situation, because Jerry never managed before. And I did. And then I went around and scouted on, you know, the different clubs in the organization. And then on the All-Star game day and break, they fired Bob. And they called me and they said, how about doing us a favor and come out and take over as interim general manager? So I flew out there. And Ray Kroc, we got together with Ballard Smith and Ray Kroc, and first thing they told me, you're not going to get the job.
They said that?
Yeah, or told me, you're not going to get the job because we want to bring a more higher profile guy in here. But go ahead and do whatever you think is right. Don't even worry about it. And I started wheeling and dealing, and then about 2 months later, after seeing Cedric Tallis, Luke Gorman, all these guys go by my office and say, hi, Jack, Gene Mock. And then finally, about 2 months later, they called me down to their office, Ray did, and I thought, well, they got somebody. And they called and said, hey, these guys, we've interviewed all these high-profile guys. They all told us what they could do and what they would do. He said, you already showed us what you could do. Do you want the job? So I said, I ended up being general manager.
What an incredible story. Jack McKeon is with us, still a special advisor to the owner of the Florida Marlins. But moving players then was just so much easier than it is now.
And it was a picnic. I mean, to be a general manager today, the game has changed. So, first of all, contracts, salaries have gone, gone wild. Now you're dealing and you're trading contracts. When I went in there in my first 2 years, I put in a rule. I wanted clean contracts. No single room, no incentives. So when I made a deal with you, you got a clean contract. So it was easy. It was easy to just wheel and deal players. Today it's, ownership's involved a whole lot more than they were when I was a general manager. And it's a little more difficult. But you talk about trades. I made a trade one time with Bill LaJoie in Dallas. We're checking out of the hotel, and Bill LaJoie's about three guys in front of me. How you doing, Bill? He said, what are you going to do with that left-handed pitcher? I forgot his name or what. I said, why, are you interested? He said, yeah. I said, okay, give me the outfielder Stedman, and you can have him. We got a deal. When we get back home, we'll call each other and announce the deal.
This is while you're waiting on the checkout line.
Checkout line in Dallas.
That could never happen today.
No, could not. Well, first of all, he wouldn't see anybody at the checkout line.
But
now I'll give you another one.
Sure.
I forget what year it was. I had a pitcher named Bob, Gary Lucas. And John McHale from Montreal sees me this day, and he said, Jack, let's talk. He said, I'm interested in Gary Lucas. Would you trade him? I said, yeah. He said, I'll give you Scott Sanderson. I had nothing against Scott Sanderson, but he didn't fit into, he wasn't what I needed. And I said, no, I'm not interested in making that trade. Okay, so that's Monday, let's say that's Monday morning. Monday evening, about 11 o'clock, I'm hanging around the lobby, and here comes Dallas Green, Uwe Alexander, Jim Fry. I said, how you guys make out? How you doing? Oh, no, he said, we just got turned down from Scott Sanderson. Scott Sanderson, you want Scott Sanderson? I'll get him for you right now. Oh, yeah, what do you want? Well, I didn't run up to my room and check the scout reports. I said, give me Carmelo Martinez and Craig Lefferts. You got a deal. Also, I went to the phone, I called John McHale. I'll meet you at breakfast, 7 o'clock. We're going to make a trade. Okay. So I turned him over. And then I go to John McHale and I said, John, I need another player. Okay, I got that player. I went back to Dallas and said, Dallas, I need another player, and I got that player. So I got 5-for-1.
It's incredibly different now than it was before. But also in the front offices, there were so many people. There were assistant general managers to go along with the general manager. You didn't have any help. You were the guy. And now, of course, now with the advent of analytics, and now you have all these statistical kids that are working in the game as well.
Well, Ed, it's funny because I was talking to our people the other day about that. I said, I went to the winter meetings. It was Dick Hager, my scout, me, my PR guy, Bill Beck, a farm director and a scouting director, five guys. That's it. We went there. We had nobody to make any confusion. But the big thing was I went in with a plan. I knew what I wanted, and I'm going to center on that plan. And whatever it takes, and I learned something from Charlie Finley was, if you get a guy, if you got a need, sometimes you might have to overpay. And I did overpay, but I got the guy I was wanted. People said you couldn't get Joe Carter. I'm going to get Joe Carter. They said you couldn't get Terry Kennedy. I'm going to get Terry Kennedy. Okay, I overpaid for those guys, but they were part of the needs I needed from to put the pieces together of my club, and you was able to do it. Today, you go into the room. Some of these clubs got 12, 14, 15 guys. And all you're doing is muddying the waters because everyone is given an opinion. And before you know it, by the last day or the next to last day, you still don't know where you're at. And that's what you said. Make it simple. Come in with a plan. Don't take too many people. You don't need too many people. They muddy the waters.
And the press used to love the fact when somebody would come into the press room at the winter meeting and say, there's going to be an announcement in 15 minutes between the involving the San Diego Padres and the Boston Red Sox or whatever.
Well, you know, it's funny. As I continue to cover or go to these meetings, I always run across, you know, one or two writers, Tracy Ringleby.
Miss the old days.
Yeah, the guy from Toronto, Bob
Elliott.
Bob Elliott. And they say, Nightingale. They say, oh, man, we don't have the fun we used to have. You remember, Jack? After that 2 o'clock announcement, we go back to your room and have a snack and a drink and talk baseball. I said, yeah. They said, we don't have that anymore. But, you know, I never forget the meeting there when I made the trade for Joe Carter about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And then I came back. I said, I'll be back. And I came back about 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock. And I had assigned Freddie Lynn. And they said, oh, we're done. I said, oh, don't leave because I'll be back again. And I came back at 1 o'clock and made an announcement where I signed Craig Leffers, and then we all headed to my suite.
But there was no clock back then. The teams could come down at 12:30 in the morning and make an announcement.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, at least I had these guys. I had all the guys in the press room see at 10 o'clock, and I told them, no, I'll be back. So they hung around and waited because they knew. But, you know, it was so nice, and the press was so good, and we used to have that genuine relationship that was sincere. And today, you know, you got so much of the media today, you know, and television and internet people, that you don't have that camaraderie that you had before.
Jack McKeon is with us. You just touched on something. The San Diego Padres made one of the biggest deals in the history of baseball with Joe Carter and Robbie Alomar leaving San Diego to go up to Toronto. Where eventually they would be key pieces in their two world championships. But the point being that players of that caliber would, it's almost impossible to imagine that there would be players of that caliber in the same deal today.
Well, you're right. First of all, the money, the contracts would kill that kind of a deal. But, you know, you talk about that trade. The new group had just, Joan Crockett just sold the club to this new group, Tom Werner and his group from L.A. And, of course, they let us all go and brought in Joe McElvain. And I still had another year left on my contract. And I stayed out in San Diego. So I'm driving home this day. At the winter meetings, that was one of the winter meetings I missed. I'm driving home from downtown San Diego to my house out in Rancho Bernardo, and I hear in the radio, well, the Padres is talking to such and such a trade, and I said, I can't believe this. Trading Robbie Alomar and Joe Carter? Well, I go about 5 more miles, and all of a sudden, it's official. I almost went off the road. How could you trade those two guys? Robbie Alomar was as close to being as a popular player in San Diego as Tony Gwynn. And Joe Carter, you know, had 29 home runs and 130 RBIs for us. But I don't know. You know, and of course they went downhill and the other club went over and won. But I don't know how you can do that. Today you can't make those trades. If you do, you got to have some kind of a real strong, I don't know what the word is, conviction that this is going to do it. I don't know.
To your point, though, everything has become so much more complex.
It's come complex, and plus the fact that you have so much, so many agents involved, and the press being putting pressure on the clubs to you know, make these kind of trades, and sometimes you succumb to those, but other times it's you got to use common sense, and well, you know, look at the trade that Boston made. Dombrowski Davis done a great job. You know, I was talking to a guy the other day, and they said, well, there's not many guys left today like you were, where you would pull, you had the boldness to pull off these big trades. And Dave's one of those kind of guys.
In a time in which baseball teams are hoarding their prospects more than ever before, this is a guy in Dombrowski who looks at them as prospects. I got to go do what I got to do. And here he brings in Chris Sale, as he brought in Miguel Cabrera and traded great prospects out of Detroit to the Marlins.
Right. Yeah, and he's been very successful in doing that stuff. But he's almost like Steinbrenner, George. I like George. You know, people just criticize George. But I think a lot, I love George about the fact he didn't care. He had a passion to win. He's almost like Jeffrey Lurie is the same way. He's got a passion to win. And you got to surround your people that's going to be interested in supporting you in those with those convictions. And George, I beat him many times. To this day, in my home, I have a telegram from 1984 and another a letter from him in 2004, and basically said the same thing. He said, "Congratulations, you deserved it. You picked my pocket too many times." And I mean, he knew that. You know, I was tough. I loved to deal with the Yankees. And I did pick their pockets a lot of times.
And beat them in the 2003 World Series.
Well, it was fun. I'd be dealing with one of the GMs, and they'd say, well, no, I wouldn't do it. I said, look, I don't care what you would do. Run this by George. Tell George this is it. And 2 days later, we'd make the deal.
You were afraid of nobody.
No, well, why should you? I had a job to do. My job was to win, just like managing. You know, I didn't worry about hurting the players' feelings. I'm here to win. Today, the managers, a lot of guys don't want to hurt guys' feelings. Too bad, pal. I've learned that you get fired quick.
Do any younger executives come to you for counsel since you have so much experience?
No, not too many do. But I'll tell you, you know what I'm so proud of? Was that when I was a GM and a young guy, and I did a lot of scouting myself, even as a general, when I had guys like John McHale would call me. Now here I am, a competitor, would call me sometime during the winter and say, Jack, what do you know about so-and-so? And I said to him, I said, John, why would you call me? He said, because you know about every player in baseball. And that was really a compliment. Like Milton Richman. You know Milton?
Yeah, from UPI. He was legendary.
Oh, man. He was one of my closest friends. And I'll never forget. On Christmas Day, you know, and I was in San Diego, and our family, we have exchange presents Christmas Eve and stuff. Well, Christmas Day, you know, you sit around. What are you going to do? I went to the ballpark. Just, that was my home, you know what I mean? I felt comfortable. I went to the ballpark for a couple hours. My private line rings, Christmas Day. Pick it up, Milton Richman. I said, Milton, why would you think that I would be in the office today? He said, Jack, there's only two people in baseball that are working today. I said, well, who's the other one? He said, George Steinbrenner. You and George are the only two guys I could catch at the ballpark today. I thought that was pretty neat.
The game today, completely different from the game that you experienced a long time ago, at a time in which now, Jack, we're looking at revenues of $11 billion. Unimaginable.
It's crazy. I mean, when you look and see, you know, the luxury tax and some of these clubs got to play tax. And I was telling somebody the other day, I said, if I recall correctly, we won the pennant. Won the pennant and went to the World Series in 84. And I think my payroll was about $9 million. I got fired because when the new owners bought the club, I proposed a budget of $16 million, including extensions of Robbie Alomar for 4 years, Benito Santiago for 3, and Bip Roberts for 3. And they said to me, you're giving away my money. I said, I'll tell you what. And I mean, these contacts were, outstanding. I said, I'm going to tell you one thing. In 2 or 3 years, if we do this, they will recognize you as geniuses. And boy, it wasn't even 3 years, it was 2 years and skyrocket. But it's a different game. You got cybermatics into this thing now. You sit around and you listen. I think half of these guys at the analytics, they make the trades. They project this guy's gonna do this, this and that. I don't know, it's a change. I'm not saying I'm not glad I'm not on the field again. I mean, I love that. I love being on the field. That was my competition. My competition as a general manager was beating the Asians, that's all. But now I love the competition. I love the pressure every day. I love the decision making.
And you're involved with ownership with Jeffrey Loria and the Florida Marlins, and what exactly are you doing?
I'm a special advisor to Jeffrey Loria. You know, he'll call and I'll recommend things and he'll bounce things off me, and I come to the meetings with him and I go to different meetings for him and do the fan fest. I go to suit up in spring training and I'll pull a Tommy Lasorda, shake hands, take my pictures, chat with the players. I'll tell you, of all the years in baseball, I'm going on 68. I've managed 17 years in the big leagues, and for owners at all these Kansas City, Cincinnati, and Oakland, and Jeffrey Loria is the best owner I ever worked for.
What a baseball life you are having.
I thank the Lord that, you know, for his blessings that I was able to, you know, get lucky enough for a guy that never played higher than Class B to be the only manager in the history of the game that has won 1,000 games in the minor leagues and 1,000 games in the major leagues is something special.
A joy always to be around you.
Thank you, and I don't think I'm done yet. You know, the title of my last book is I'm Just Getting Started.
That'll do it for Jack McKean and myself on MLB.com. If you're on the move, thanks for the ride, and thanks for listening to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball.